evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 4th, 2019. Warring parties in South Sudan accuse government troops of not staying in the barracks.
From the part of the Chigoni, we are seeing a relaxation in which, if the perception is to contone the other parties, then that is completely wrong. The SSPDF should also go to the barracks. And that's the only way we can move this country forward, because that would also raise a question if we don't do it.
And Sudan's Prime Minister prepares to appoint civilian members to his cabinet.
Cabinet formation will come in the recognition of all elements of the Sudanese community, including women.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some generals representing the opposition in the ceasefire and transitional security arrangement monitoring and verification mechanism say while the opposition is making some progress in moving their forces to designated cantonment sites, the South Sudan People's Defense Force are not doing the same as required by the peace agreement. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The peace deal requires different forces to be assembled, cantoned and trained as one unified force before the parties form a unity government. Opposition generals say that is not happening when it comes to the government's forces. Brigadier General Chol Roy, who represents the SPLA-IO in the Ceasefire Monitoring Body's Technical Committee, says Juba should ensure that its forces report to their barracks to signal the government's commitment to implementing the peace deal's security arrangements.
From the part of the Chigoni, we are seeing a relaxation in which, if the perception is to contone the other parties, then that is completely wrong. The SSPDF should also go to the barracks. And that's the only way we can move this country forward, because that would also raise a question if we don't do it. The trust that has been built for the last few months, then we should continue building it by putting in place all the required business cities. And there should not be assumption that the opposition parties should only be integrated into the SPDF.
General Peter Mabior, who represents the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, or SOA, in the ceasefire monitoring body, says a shortage of essential commodities at cantonment sites remains a big problem.
Food, medicines, and other items are not timely reaching our forces on the ground. I would also want to say that barracking is not happening as was planned and was signed by in the agreement. I think it seems that there is a misunderstanding between cantonment and barracking. The government forces are not barracking as was planned, and I think this is it's not fair to the agreement. If these people are moving to cantonment, we should also see activities in barracking.
Bior says failure of the government's forces to go to the barracks puts the entire peace agreement in jeopardy. In addition, the Kiir administration pledged $100 million to implement the security arrangements. To date, the government has provided only $10 million of that amount. Government military spokesman Major General Lul Roy Kwong insists the government has withdrawn all SSPDF soldiers from various outposts and has transferred them to the main barracks across the country, where they will be screened for unified training.
The agreement says we must be screened at our barracks. And after screening, those who are qualified for military service would be instructed to go to unified training centers. Likewise, IO forces and other opposition forces were required to move together instead of them being scattered all over the bushes of South Sudan.
Generals with the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, the SPLA-IO, and the former detainees accused the Kiir administration of increasing the number of government forces in Juba and of setting up several checkpoints during nighttime hours, which they say frightened some local residents. Major General Bior Lake, who represents former detainees in the ceasefire monitoring body, is urging the government to reduce its number of forces deployed at night.
Because that one also might scare some of the citizens. Because when you go from 500 to 1,000 meters and then you get another shell force, if you have these coward settlements, then you will not move. So we had to reduce the number of checkpoints.
Wong says the government increased the number of checkpoints to improve the level of security for Juba residents.
It is intended to ensure the safety and protection of people as they move about their business station during the evening hours, as they go back home, as they go to entertainment places. So it is not a threat, it is not an occasion of anything terrible is going to happen. They should not interpret it that way.
Opposition generals are also calling on authorities to investigate recent deadly fighting in Awil and Yei, where more than 8 people were killed in clashes between government forces and forces loyal to former Chief of Staff General Paul Malong. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Sudan's new Prime Minister, Abdallah Hamdok, is expected to announce 14 civilian members of his cabinet within days following consultations with the pro-democracy group Forces for Freedom and Change. Reports say the list includes Sudan's first female foreign minister, Asma Abdallah, and a former World Bank economist, Ibrahim al-Badawi, as finance minister. Hamjad Farid, a spokesman for the Sudanese Professional Association, tells James Batty that Sudanese hope the United States and other Western countries will adopt what he calls a more principled approach in dealing with Sudan by lifting sanctions.
I know some of the names because some of them were selected in consultation with the FSC, but it is the decision of the Prime Minister on the final say of who is going to be in the cabinet.
We hear that for the first time this will be a first female foreign minister. What does that mean for Sudan if this is the case?
I cannot confirm whether this is true or wrong because this is the decision of the Prime Minister, which will be announced within the coming 48 hours. But what I'm sure of is that cabinet formation will come in recognition of all elements of the Sudanese community, including women.
How much input did the Forces for Freedom and Change have in getting to this new cabinet?
What I can say is that a long and deep consultation between the Prime Minister and the cabinet was conducted in full understanding on selection of the name for the cabinet. And the Prime Minister himself was selected by the Forces of Freedom and Change, but he is the Prime Minister of all Sudan, not only of the Freedom and Change. And there is a wide space of understanding between Dr. Hamdok and the FSC.
A new finance minister, we understand, also has been named, and maybe a former bank official. Sudan will face a lot of economic challenges ahead. What would you like to see from the international community?
I cannot confirm or deny any appointment of any minister cabinet before the announcement of the prime minister, but regarding the international community and specifically the U.S., they think that we in Sudan are waiting to see a more principled approach in dealing with Sudan. Sudan is faced with a lot of international sanctions because its presence on the state sponsor of terrorism list of the U.S. and Sudan and Sudanese people were never sponsoring of terrorism. This was the previous regime. This was the Bashir regime who sponsored terrorism. And for the last 6 years, the U.S. was opening up to al-Bashir to deal with him as a legitimate leader of Sudan. And in the case of Taliban and Saddam Hussein, the U.S. had to invade Iraq and Afghanistan to get rid of them. Actually, in the case of Sudan, the Sudanese people overthrew Bashir, who was supporting terrorism alone and solely. And so it's very unethical to continue punishing the Sudanese people and the new cabinet for the terrorism that was supported by a previous leader by the U.S. So I'm expecting to see a principled and ethical decision in a very quick lifting of the name of Sudan from that list and full support for the new cabinet to overcome the too many problems and crises that caused by the heritage of 30 years of radicalization and terrorism and terrorism.
That's Amjad Farid, a spokesman for the Sudanese Professional Association, speaking with my colleague James Batty from Khartoum. 10 Sudanese rebel groups are meeting today in Juba to try to form an umbrella group to negotiate with Khartoum's new sovereign council. An official with the SPLA North faction says the Juba meeting is aimed at strengthening the opposition of various rebel groups with the transitional government, and President Kiir will be mediating with the government in Khartoum. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Yasser Arman, deputy chairman of the SPLM North faction, led by Malik Agar, says the revolution won't be finished until rebel groups have a say in Sudan's future.
The revolution in Sudan is incomplete because there is no peace. And without peace, there will be a lot of problems, because you will have an economy of war. You will have Sudan will not normalize with the outside world.
Arman says today's meeting with President Kiir at J1 brings Sudanese a step closer to realizing peace in their country. Following a breakthrough deal between the Transitional Military Council and the Forces for Freedom and Change Coalition reached last month, Prime Minister Hamdok is expected to announce a new cabinet later this week. Sudan had been rocked by months of protests since last December, a move that led to overthrow of longtime President Omar al-Bashir in April. Arman says the Sudanese peace deal signed between the Sudanese Military Council and the opposition, however, does not fully address Sudan's problems.
Sudanese people, they have realized a big victory after the overthrow General Bashir, but it's not completed yet. We are here to complete it. We need the new government to adopt a new policy, and we need the new government to put the peace as number one priority.
Tuth Galwak, President Salva Kiir's advisor on security affairs, who has helped mediate between the Sudanese government and its various rebel groups, says today's joint meeting with the 10 rebel groups follows a series of consultations aimed at restoring stability in Sudan.
It started in Addis Ababa. It did not reach an agreement. It went to Cairo. It did not materialize into an agreement. It went to Paris, and it went to many places. But with God's acceptance and good intention from our President Salva Kiir Mayardit, yesterday, after 2 weeks of long negotiation with the groups, including those of Yasser, and with God's acceptance, all the groups united and agreed to work under one umbrella of the Sudan Revolution Front.
Besides the two SPLM North factions led by Malik Agar and Abdelaziz Al-Hilu, rebel groups within the Sudan Revolutionary Front include the Sudanese Movement for Justice and Equality led by Jibril Ibrahim, the Sudan Liberation Movement led by Al-Thayer Hagar, the Sudan Liberation Movement faction led by Mani Arkominawi, the Sudan Liberation Movement Transitional Council led by Al-Hadi Idris, and the National Democratic Party in opposition led by Al-Tom Hajo. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Malawi tries to tackle the problem of child trafficking. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you run for public office, what would be your top political priority?
Politically, I think I would be a woman MP. I would put in place measures to ensure that women's financial abilities are explored, to boost their earnings and their financial status.
To reform the health sector by renovating the hospitals and providing basic necessary needs at the hospital facilities.
to reduce the hardship and the hunger in the society, honestly, because I will use my office to create so many poverty alleviation programs.
My top political priority will be education for all, because education is the foundation for all the different development sectors.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA. South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Pope Francis was greeted by tens of thousands of Mozambicans today as he begins his first visit to the South African country. The pontiff says he brings a message of peace to the nation, which has endured decades of civil war and conflict. VOA's Anita Paul reports from Maputo.
Peace is the pontiff's main message as he embarks on his three-nation Africa tour, starting in Mozambique's capital, Maputo. In a recorded message ahead of his arrival, Pope Francis addressed Mozambicans in the nation's dominant language, Portuguese.
Estáis todos na minha oração. Aseio pelo momento de vos encontrar.
I cannot wait to meet you, he says. You are all in my prayers. I invite you all to join in my prayer that the God and Father of all may bring about fraternal reconciliation in Mozambique and throughout Africa, which is the only hope for a solid and lasting peace. It's a powerful message, Mozambicans say, especially in the wake of a recent peace agreement that aimed to bring an end to decades of violence that followed a brutal 16-year civil war. However, cracks are beginning to appear in the fragile deal, with members of the opposition Renamo Party accusing members of the ruling Frelimo Party of attacking their members in rural Mozambique. The two parties were the main combatants in the civil war. On his three-day visit, the Pope will meet with lawmakers, youth, and clergy. Father Giorgio Ferretti, parish priest of the Cathedral of Maputo, says he also expects the pontiff to address other major challenges that Mozambique faces.
We know he will talk about poor people, he will talk about environment, he will talk about peace, he will talk about universal fraternity, but not in a simple way, with his own spiritual words. And that is what we are looking for and waiting for to hear.
In the sunny seaside capital, things appeared characteristically relaxed hours ahead of the Pope's landing. After Mozambique, he will continue to the island nations of Madagascar and Mauritius. The Pope also sent video messages to them. He spoke in Italian to Mauritians who speak English, French, Creole, and Hindi, and to the Malagasy people who speak French and Malagasy. That's because, he said, the language of the gospel is love. Anita Powell, VOA News, Maputo.
From Maputo, we move to Malawi, where the government is struggling to end child trafficking despite existing legislation intended to stop the problem. The Trafficking in Persons Act, which was enacted 4 years ago, also mandated the creation of a special fund to support victims. But efforts to reinforce the law remain a challenge, as Lamik Masena reports from Blantyre.
A teenager who we will call Maggie recalls the day back in 2018 when she says she and other two girls were trafficked from Neno district in southern Malawi to work as prostitutes in the commercial capital, Blantyre. Maggie said their families were misled by two strangers who came to their village pretending that a woman was seeking to recruit girls as housemaids. She said they were later turned over to this woman, but they were not taken to the person's home. She says when we arrived in Blantyre, we were taken to a drinking joint full of men taking opaque beer. We were given knives. When we asked about the use of the knives, she told us that we were employed to save beer and sleep with men to earn a living. Maggie was 17 at the time. The other two were 16 and 19. Maggie says although they were devastated and scared, thoughts of poverty back home forced them to do as they were told after being promised a salary of about $20 a month. She says she gave us a target of sleeping with 40 men per day, but she was the one collecting the payment and never paid us the promised salary. And whenever we failed to meet the target, we were not given food to eat. After forcibly working as a prostitute for 2 months, Maggie, now 18, says tough conditions forced the three of them to flee. The issue later caught the attention of child rights group People Saving Girls at Risk, which runs a project on child trafficking. Since last September, however, their case has been beset with delays, largely due to lack of interest in reinforcing existing anti-trafficking laws. In 2015, Malawi enacted a Trafficking in Persons Act, which mandated the creation of Trafficking in Persons Fund to support the victims in terms of care and court proceedings. Child rights campaigners say the arrangement continues to lack procedures to support the victims. They say, for example, no budget has been allocated to the fund this year. Caleb Ngombo is the director of People Saving Girls at Risk.
Lack of enforcement of laws is affecting us in so many ways. For example, for an institution to take a case to court requires a lot of resources. And for you just to lose it on technicality is a major setback, not only to us as an organization, but also to the girls who are searching for justice.
Ngombo says with support from international women's rights organization, Equality Now, efforts are being made to seek justice for victims.
On average, every year, we respond to a considerable number of cases, both in the way that we respond to them directly, but also just to make referral to other organizations. So I would say in a year, an average of not less than 200 cases.
The organization also provides economic empowerment to vulnerable young people like Maggie.
We have identified a community-based trainer on tailoring skills as well as knitting skills to ensure that they have some business skills for them to manage the tailoring as well as the knitting project.
Peter Langwe is the Child Protection Officer in the Ministry of Gender, Children, Disability and Social Welfare. He told VOA that despite challenges in reinforcement of the trafficking in persons legislation, other efforts are being made to stop the vice. He says the ministry is holding meetings to encourage communities to reinforce child protection rules. Langwe says the bylaws stipulates that those found or facilitating child trafficking are subjected to a penalty of 4 goats to their traditional leaders and have their cases taken to court. The effort, Langwe says, has helped cut trafficking in girls by 1/2. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
From Blantyre, we move back to Juba, where a recent basketball training camp in the South Sudan capital urged young South Sudanese to focus on sport. The 3-day camp, led by professional coaches and scouts, was aimed at teaching basketball and leadership skills to South Sudanese kids with an eye toward identifying children with talents for eventual opportunities locally or internationally in the NBA. Ding Magot has this story for VOA from Juba.
The searing hot sun did not stop 50 South Sudanese boys from training at Juba Manutes Ball Stadium with Masai Ujiri, president of the Toronto Raptors basketball team and founder of Giants of Africa, a non-profit that empowers Africa's youth through basketball. Ujiri says he wants to create awareness and support for underprivileged boys and young men who ordinarily will not be given the chance to train with professionals.
The camps are things that we try to spread around Africa. Yeah, we're going to try and come back to as many countries as we can. It's challenging sometimes because this is something that we do in the summer and we're trying to figure out ways to sustain it during the year. But our camps are mostly during the summer in August, and we come and spend 3 days in every country. And we try to teach them, provide them with basketball facilities, whether it's basketball, shoes, gear, and also the coaching.
This year, Giants of Africa held camps in Morocco, Mali, Somalia, Cameroon, and South Sudan. Ujiri says all the players in the various camps are in school. He says Giants of Africa believes education is critically important for all kids.
A lot of these kids, you know, like we stay in touch with them we try to help them to get into schools wherever it is, whether it's on the other side or in the States or in Canada or schools here. The first thing I asked when I spoke to the kids is how many of them are in school, you know, and we need to know these things because education is such a big part of what their lives are going to be. It's very, very, like, this much are going to make it to the NBA, you know, like, but it's this much that are going to be people and persons of the world.
72% of South Sudanese are illiterate, according to UNICEF. Michael Achuel, the director of operations for the Manute Ball basketball program at the Luoldeng Foundation, says the foundation often selects players who show resilience and a competitive drive.
You bring somebody who knows a little bit how to play. So that's how we make a selection. If I don't bring somebody who knows play, they will not have fun. You get frustrated and learning new things.
16-year-old Daniel Akwir Garang is a senior 4 student in Juba. Akwir says he has played basketball in Guatemala and Kenya, but really appreciates what he has learned at the camp in Juba.
It's very important because it helps us improve our shooting, dribbling skills, and also it helps us in defending and help us also to run faster. And I really think that's going to benefit South Sudanese because it will give an opportunity for the people who are coming so they can, the local people here can have an opportunity to go outside and play outside in a different curry, not exactly here in South Sudan.
15-year-old Matet Taban Matet is a Form 2 student studying in Uganda who says he has trained and played in Uganda and Kenya, but also sees the camp as a great opportunity.
What I'm benefiting from this camp, it makes me improve on my shooting, on my jumping power, and my handles. And what I'm benefiting from basketball is free education, which are like, my goal in future is to be an NBA player, and I also want to be a lawyer.
Masai Ujiri says the camp creates a peaceful environment that brings kids together from different places for healthy competition, but perhaps more importantly, inspires them to dream big. This is the first time Ujiri has visited South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
That's our show for this Wednesday. My friend Dr. James Okuk, who has been a frequent commentator on this program, told me he visited Maridi and liked the place. So we'll leave you with an Avukaya traditional song from Maridi State.
Yeah.
We've been listening to a traditional Avukaya song from Maridi State. The Avukaya are found in Maridi State and Yei River State in South Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Hey.